to up?
Well, it's a 4x4 in the ground. You post hole digger, you just dig a post, and you just drop the post in your backyard.
Yeah, I think at the moment I'm sort of on a large amount of concrete in buckets. So if I took four buckets of concrete and then just built a 4x4 plinth off the four buckets, then if I make that detachable, then it all comes down very, 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 very quickly.
Wait a minute. I'm missing this. You can pull a 16-foot 4x4 out of the ground in about 2 minutes. Just really just rock the thing and really hard, and you just lift it straight out. I've done that all the time. I've done that lots of times. So is there something more dynamic that you need to be able to do?
Honestly, I need to show that this thing is just sort of sitting on the actual ground, that no ground is actually broken. Yeah, you know, otherwise I then get into, you know, you've made a permanent structure.
A 4x4 pole in your backyard, really?
If you have to take it in, then it's effectively, yeah.
But no, someone will actually care, other than your wife?
If the landlord comes calling, if the town comes calling, then actually, yeah.
Good God. Tell him it's your personal swing set, except you left all, you never put it in the other post.
My swing set is actually free-floating, and when they actually moved it, there were six guys carried it out of, into the truck, and carried it out of the truck, set it down, and it hasn't moved since.
Ah, okay. So along the side of the swing set, you set your with a tall post and start your antenna above the height of the swing set.
I'll look into that. That's actually a good idea. Thank you.
I don't need a 16-footer at that point, maybe a 12 or a 10. Just bolt it in to the side, foot it with a spike just to keep it from moving, and, you know, attach your aluminum radiator to the 4x4 that's now bolted to the swing set. And, you know, on the top of that mast, you can, as I said, add a fiberglass pole, which has a spout wire to extend the element higher. And there's your vertical. And the first radial could go across the ridge line of your swing set and, stay bolted to the top of the swing set. The kids would never even know it, wouldn't bother them or anything. So you've already got your first elevated radial right across the top of the swing set.
That's a very good idea. Thank you.
You're welcome. And what the best part is, you go out and, you know, push the kids on the swings. When they're done with that, you know, after the swings rot and fall off or the kids outgrow them, you'll have a great reason to keep that swing set in the yard. By the way, one of my antenna mounts in my backyard is supported by the remnants of a home-built, in-the-ground swing set that I built 25 years ago. The swing part and all that stuff is gone, but the little climbing fortress part is still there in its rudimentary form. And it no longer is accessible as a platform, but the 6x6s, the 4 6x6s are all bolted together and provide the main for one of my short towers that holds up the end of my dipole. So, yes, it's a great idea. No matter what you do with it, you scale it to what you have, and well, you can make good use of that. All right, anybody else have any ideas? Hey, Paul, you anything more from you?
Nothing more from me. W2APP, sending it back to K2BAR. I think from no topics, no comments, we got an hour and 10 minutes out of it.
Kind of works that way. You know, no matter what you guys have stuff winding in their head. Very good. Thank you for that. That was a rather diverse set of subjects from you and Rick. Thank you both. And I did mention that I was selling the THF6 and also the tower, but I also have... I sell my my ICOM 7000 as well. So if there is interest, come see me in any and all these little goodies. So 7-3 all, and have a good one. And if anyone wants to join the ComTech group, just shoot me an email at w2ttt@awrl.net or att.net. And if you or somebody else is interested in upgrading your license on the 27th or in the evening, you're welcome to come around 6, 7 o'clock and take the test. W2JEK and company will be there to administer exams for any license class. And if you have people who would like to get their technician and want to study, they're welcome to come 8 o'clock in the morning for the all-day study session. So anyway, 7-3 and have a good one, and God bless. This is K2BAR thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. Thank you all for your participation tonight and interest, and encourage everyone. Blessed and peaceful, wonderful, Merry Christmas, and a peaceful and prosperous and hopefully much better New Year. We need a better New Year than this one was, I'll tell you. So God bless, and Merry Christmas. W2TTT. See you next Thursday.
Connected N2OEL. N2OEL. Disconnected. Connected. N2OEL. N2OEL. Disconnected.
UMP listening.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Doing good. Went to the doctor yesterday Wednesday for my checkup, and finally gave me the goal for another 3 months. So I guess I'm doing all right. How you doing? How'd you make out?
I'm all right. He's still got to go back in 3 or 4 months. He's got to go back in again and just make sure everything came out, but it came back benign.
That's good news. I'm glad of that. What's new otherwise? I haven't been on the air lately, so I've been away from the radio. I hear Charlie's back.
Yes, sir. Yesterday was his first day, and he got his mobile. He's got his RF dose, so he's happy.
I know what that's like when you get away from it for a while. get you going again.
Yeah, I did the same thing back in my 11-meter days. I was hot and heavy into it in the beginning. Then I just left the equipment sit for a while. Then I went back into it, got out of it, and here I am.
I guess you got to take a break every once in a while. Get away from it, break up the monotony, and do other things. And you get back into it real quick, that's for sure. Anyway, how you doing on the low bench? Any good contacts, or you're not ready yet? Got to get a better antenna up, or what's going on?
KD2BOR. I made a few local contacts. I haven't made anything out of the country in a while. I actually had some out-of-the-country contacts when I had the tech license on 10 meters, so it wasn't too bad. I've been making a few contacts. The best I can do, Paul, I can just about tune up pretty good on 17 on that Antron. That's the furthest I can go. I had a nice do-so with a guy down in Florida last weekend, but I was interfering with somebody's telephone next door, so I ceased transmission for a little while.
Yeah, I guess you got to do that every once in a while. Well, once you get yourself a decent antenna, you'll be okay. How big is the area or where you work? How big an area you got up on the roof? Can you put up a decent dipole up there?
I could probably do more here at the shop, but in the springtime, I'm going to talk to my landlord. Charlie's going to give me a hand. He's going to see what the property looks like and see what I can think about doing there. And, I don't know, not too big a one, but something I can just work with a little bit.
As long as you can get down to 40 or 20 meters, you'll be doing great. There's a lot of action there, especially on 40 at this time of night.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Steve, KB2TIA, tells me about that all the time. It's hopping. I've been doing all right on 10, sometimes early when I get home on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon. 10 is still open, so, I go down there because the Antron tune's just as good on 10 as it would 11 with the tuner, so, you know, I don't have any problems.
Yeah, that's true. You get the decent SWR, then you can make out. And, 10 is open pretty good in the early morning, so... Should really make a few good contacts there, too. Anyway, all right, let's see who else pops up. KD2BOR, AC2T.
Hey, Paul, good talking to you. We'll be here monitoring. I got to start a couple invoices. I came in this morning right away and put two tires on a truck. Guy needs it early, so I got that done first before I hopped on the radio. So we'll be monitoring. KD2BOR.
Roger, I will too, AC2T. AC2T, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Paul. How's it going? AC2T, N1LU Mobile.
Well, I'm doing all right so far. Went to the doctor the other day, and he gave me a go-ahead for another 3 months. So Other than that, a little ache in the back, and I'm doing good. How you doing?
Much better now that I got the car back and the radio. It's been tough for this past month. Not to mention the car they gave me, Ford Taurus, was a bit of a gas guzzler. This Mazda does a lot better on gas, so I won't be spending a lot of money on gasoline. It was killing me. I thought it was going to take forever. That was a long time to go without my car.
Well, it was, went without two things, without your car and without the radio in the car, so I know what that could be like. Anyway, before I say anything, I want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas, because I don't know if, when I'll catch you again, so make sure I get you the Christmas greetings, and hopefully you have a good Christmas, and, well, it's almost like a Christmas present getting your car back.
Yeah, I should have put a bow on top of it. Thanks very much, and the same to you, of course. Yeah, Christmas is going to be a bit of a bummer work-wise this year. It's on a Wednesday, so I don't see any extra time. I like when it's on a Friday, get a nice three-day weekend, or a Monday, or even a Sunday. They move it to Monday, day off. But this year I'll have Christmas day off and then go back to work for 2 days. That really stinks.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Hate that when they have the Christmas holidays in the middle of the week there. Like you say, it's on the end of the week or something like that. You can get 2 or 3 days out of it, so it works out pretty good that way. Anyway, car working all right. No problems with that.
Nope, seems fine. My second day in it, and it's doing good. Put it through its paces yesterday, and, you know, it's back to normal. It's getting a little dirty. I'm glad I missed out on some of those snowstorms anyway without the car. Kept it from getting too messed up, but obviously now everything's melting, so the roads are getting wet and dirt. It looked great. It looked showroom new yesterday. Now it's a filthy mess. So now I'm going to have to start to paying for some car washes and trying to keep it clean. But they did a real good job. They cleaned it up nicely. The place I took it to is very well known in the area. They do good work. They're a little slow, I guess, because they take their time. Plus, they're very busy. They must have 5 bays where they, you know, do work on cars. Painting, you know, cleaning them up, getting them looking good. So they're a very successful business.
That sounds good, I tell you, hey, if you get a place like that, boy, you don't want to lose it. I know what it's like. I had a few cars that got banged up, but not, you know, for anything that I did, but not that people banged into it and stuff like that, but no really major, you know, crash damage. A couple of times I had a dead battery or something like that, or a flat tire, but nothing major, so thank God for that. All right, I'll stand by, see who else is popping up. I spoke to Rocky before. He's at the shop doing some paperwork, so he'll probably pop in and say hello. And 1LU, HC2T.
All right, very good, Paul. Good to hear you this morning. Nice to get back on the road and back into my usual routine. Yeah, I didn't get much radio in during this past month. Been very busy in the house, so I haven't had time to get on the base all that much. And of course, most of my ham radio is done in the car, at least during the week. So I haven't had any of that. Although I did bring my Baofeng a couple of times and got on the air once I got on the Palisades Parkway, close to the repeater. But not the same. It's like talking on a cell phone. Okay, very good. I'm sure Rocky's out there. Let's see, KD2BOR and 1LU Mobile.
Hey, good morning, Charlie, KD2BOR. How you doing today, and what progress did you make on your son's car?
Well, it's there. I had AAA tow it to Honda. in Greenwich. And they didn't have a chance, obviously, yesterday to look at it, so they're going to, I guess, put it on their diagnostic machine and get back to me today. So I've got my fingers crossed. We'll see what happens. I'm wondering if the heat not working is related to the problem or just coincidence.
That doesn't sound, I don't want to put anything in your head. You had a problem once before. The guy said there was coolant coming out of it, and they said there wasn't. Now, I didn't know that you had a problem with the heat again. I don't know. I'll wait today for you to tell me what they said.
Yeah, well, I've never had a problem with the heat, as far as I know. This is the first time I noticed that, but, you know, the blower's working. Just nothing hot coming out of it.
I think I asked you this last time when you had it running after you had the problem. Excuse me. You didn't happen to see, well, it's hard to tell this time of the year being colder out. You didn't happen to see any white smoke or anything coming off the tailpipe, did you?
I actually didn't notice. I mean, nothing noticeable.
I guess all we can do now is sit and wait for them to call you. When you find out, let me know what's going on. I'm really interested about this, because it doesn't make any sense with the no heat in the engine misfire.
Well, if the engine wasn't misfiring, what would no heat indicate to you?
82 be alarmed. It could be a lot of things, Charlie. I can give you a whole laundry list, but low coolant, something in the climate control system itself not working. Even if you had a stuck open thermostat, you would get some type of heat. It just wouldn't be as hot. If the car had a bad head gasket, if it's getting compression into the cooling system, that can stop the water from flowing around also.
Yeah, the only thing that bothers me is that that other mechanic, who's very well known in the area as well, been there forever. Why would he tell me it had a cracked engine block and then Honda tell me that wasn't the case? Luckily, I've got it in writing from Honda from the first time I brought it. So if all of a sudden they come up with this scenario that it's got a cracked engine block, at least I have some sort of defense that they told me that that wasn't the problem the last time. I don't think an engine's going to crack after 120,000 miles and within a month or two of last being checked.
No, I don't think so either. And where I looked online about those cracks, that's in the outer part of the block where the cooling jacket is. That would not put coolant into the cylinders. It would have to be a head gasket, or the inner cylinder wall would have to be cracked, or a cylinder head. But, all right, let's just cross our fingers and hopefully it's just a bad coil that they put in.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. I just don't know why there's no heat. I don't know what that could be related to. So I guess we'll find out. Car's costing me a fortune.
Well, look at all the years you drove it, Charlie, that it didn't cost you a fortune. It does have some miles on it, but usually those cars are good for a ton of miles, especially with the highway miles you put on. I had a mishap yesterday. I knew I had a slight crack in one of my tires, and I was debating on buying new tires. And yesterday afternoon, my right rear tire blew out. I got it back to the shop. I found this morning it broke one of the tire pressure monitors that's in the wheel. I got a real disaster going on.
God bless you. Yeah, sorry to hear about that. Oh, I didn't realize there were tire sensors in the wheels. I guess that's a drag.
Yeah, I ordered the new tires yesterday afternoon. They delivered it next door for me because I was up taking care of Debbie's father. And this morning I ordered a new tire monitor. So I got to put that in and program it. And what a disaster.
Is it an expensive fix or just time-consuming?
Well, the monitor is only about $70 only. The tires are costing me, at my price, are costing me about $1.30 a piece, and thank God I can put them on and off the car myself.
doesn't sound like a bad price for the, those size tires. I guess they're, what, 17-inch?
KD2BOR. No, I got 16s on mine. 235, 75, 16s.
I have a question for you, Rocky.
Go ahead, Paul.
You've been on it for a long time. I mean, what's the difference? I remember the old times. At least you can work on the engines and, you know, set the timing and everything else. And now with all these newfangled gadgets they have on these engines and computers and stuff, do you find a difference in, you know, in the operation or working on it, AC2T?
Paul, the new system makes the car sometimes easier to repair. Sometimes it makes it harder. I got a Chevy pickup outside right now, what they call an EVAP problem in the fuel tank system, and I can't, I've smoked it, I've done everything. I can't find the leak in the system. It's back for the third time. Customer's pretty good about it, so I got to see what I can do with that this morning, too.
Boy. Yeah, well, that's what I say, all these newfangled things. The old days, you really can, you know, you used to open the hood and you could look down and you actually see the road. With these new cars, you open the hood and you look down and all you see is a tangle of hoses and wires and stuff. So it's amazing. And, the difference, you know, used to be, I remember years, we used to do our own timing, change our own plugs and all that stuff, and, you know, get on the road right away. But nowadays, forget it. And the way they set some of these engines up, you can't even get at the plugs. So, anyway, over to you, Charlie, AC2T.
Okay, thanks a lot, Paul. Just getting over the Tappan Zee Bridge. I'll be getting on the exit for 9W. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. The old cars, when you looked at the engine, you could see the ground underneath. There was so much space in there. But nowadays, there's nothing. And it's really cram-packed, especially with the, you know, the smaller they make these cars. I can't imagine what the engine compartment looks like in a smart car. I'd rock.
I have seen a few smart cars, 52BOR. I have never seen the engine compartment, but I hear it's a disaster. And Paul is right. Some of these cars today, trying just to get to the spark plugs, you have to have special tools. You got to take them. Intake manifolds, all kinds of things. It's nuts. All right, back over to you, Paul.
I know what you mean. And, smart car. I tell you, I would want to be in a wreck with one of those things. Wow. I've been close to one of them. And, man, there's nothing much of a car there.
Yeah, I think that's good for tooling around town, but I don't think I'd want to make a, you know, a 100-mile round trip in a smart car. Jesus, I hope they don't have 9W clothes. I see a bunch of emergency vehicles up here. That's the problem with 9W. You got tree limbs breaking left and right. No, they don't. It looks like somebody's stuck. Stand by a second. I've got to pick it up, Ron.
82BOR, I'll be on the side just for a little bit here. I'm trying to get some brake rotors off of the car.
Yeah, okay, I'll be standing by here too. And Charlie, you're lucky that you didn't have to take the George Washington Bridge a few days ago. Oh man, that was something else. They say traffic was backed up all the way up to Greenwich on 95. So, amazing. Took people 4 hours from down in Manhattan to get across the bridge. But that's amazing. They had to do some emergency repairs on the bridge. Over to you, Charlie, AC2T.
Yeah, I've been seeing that. I took the bridge a couple of days ago, but you know, I went the backside, so to speak. I went over the Henry Hudson Bridge in Manhattan and made a quick U-turn and got onto the bridge that way and avoided any kind of mess that there might have been. But for the most part, I go off to the Tappan Zee. always listen to traffic. And Joe NY2EE sends me his traffic alerts that he gets. And it's been saying every day this week that the upper level outbound, three lanes closed. But I usually listen just to hear. You know, they don't always mention outbound on the George Washington Bridge unless there's something going on. I've been meaning to send a little email off to them and telling them there's a lot of people that commute early in the morning on the outbound. It would be nice if you mentioned outbound and inbound conditions because it really does make a difference to me which way I'm going to go to work. So whenever I'm not sure, when in doubt, I take the Tappan Zee Bridge. Pretty ironic because they just raised the toll on the George, and now they're putting these people through hell. Well, I tell you, that's one thing I'm not going to miss when I retire, is this freaking commute. AC2TN1LU, mobile.
Well, you got a long commute. When I was working, it was 18 miles round trip, so that was great. And I was going opposite the traffic, you know. All the traffic was heading south, and I was heading north, so that was great. And like I said, it was real easy, ride. So I didn't mind that at all. I know some of the people used to drive a good 50, 60 miles to come to work. You're nuts. I'm glad I don't have to do that. N1LUAC2T.
We've got two guys that live in Pennsylvania, one in Bethlehem, and another guy in Broadheadsville, and they have quite a commute. In fact, when I was taking that route to D.C., the way that Willie P. told me about, I took 78 west into Pennsylvania, and that's a long ride. And then this guy comes 78 east. Then jumps on 95 north, so he's got quite a ride from PA. But he's over there because, home prices are better. Cost of living's a lot less than living in New Jersey or Connecticut, for that matter. I don't know if I'd be able to live in Connecticut if I was doing it on my salary. But my wife makes more money than I do, and I make pretty good money. That's the only thing keeping us in Connecticut. That's why I'm hoping when we retire to a cheaper state between our two pensions, we'll be able to live quite comfortably.
Yeah, well, that's the way some people do it. I got a few friends of mine they used to live up in the Mayo Pack area. They got too much for them, so they moved down to South Carolina, and they said they're doing great down there. Houses are reasonable, and taxes are reasonable, so they can make it out down there on their retirement. Other than that, everybody moves to where they want to, and where they can move, get along with the prices and stuff. That I can see. So far, I can hold with my pension and Social Security. I can just about hang on over here. And if I can't, I guess I'll have to do something, different. But I'm all alone, so I can handle it. And that's the main thing. So I guess holiday, I'll be heading out for a couple of days. My granddaughter says she's going to come pick me up and take me over to her house in Long Island for a couple of days. So we'll see how that works out. But it's not bad. I hate driving in Long Island. I can say that I drove the Long Island Expressway for that 2 miles an hour because that's what happened many times I went out that way. Go there, it takes me an hour. Coming back, it takes me three.
AC2T N1LU mobile. Yeah, you've got to time that commute right. I used to commute out. Well, not commute. I used to drive out to the Hamptons on a fairly regular basis. Don't go out there that much anymore. Before the kids were born, we'd go out a lot, but if you get on there at the wrong time, I call it the Long Island Distress Way, because that's about what it does to you. And even when you get out there, or when you get out off the end of Sunrise Highway out in Southampton, in the summer, you could be in bumper-to-bumper traffic all the way to Sag Harbor just because of the influx of, you know, of city slickers, as I used to call them when I lived out there. It gets more popular every year. When I was a kid, it was bad enough, but now it's horrible. I mean, I can't even find a spot to park sometimes in my hometown when I go out to visit the family.
Yeah, I know how that is. You know, I used to love to drive up north, upstate, rather than go down to Long Island and stuff. I hate going down, driving down in the city. That's a mess. If I have to, I have to. But if I haven't been down in the city, I would say a good a couple of years now. So if I don't have to go down there, I ain't going down there. That's the way I feel. And 1LU, AC2T.
Yeah, if you're referring to the city as New York, yeah, I hate driving in there. We did it for a while, not on a regular basis, but often enough when, you know, the kids were into seeing plays. I mean, they'd still go see a play, just that it's hard to get tickets. But I hate going into the city. We went there, I think, last year around Thanksgiving to bring my son back to the bus station at the stop in front of a strip club or something, adult club or something like that. Anyway, I sat through a light 7 times. That, you know, the Christmas holiday, New Year, Thanksgiving, all that. A lot of people come to the city. Traffic's horrible, absolutely horrible. I cannot stand going there. I'd rather drive to D.C. and pick them up, and that's what I've been doing lately, than battle with New York City traffic. AC2T, N1LU, mobile. Just getting ready to get on the Palisades.
Yeah, well, that's a nice road too, the Palisades. I have a cousin that's down in New Brunswick area, and I have a nephew down just outside of Philly, in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. So every once in a while, I mean, I hear from them on email, but I think I've been down there once or twice. One of these days, when the weather's good, I might decide to take a trip down that way. But other than that, that's the only time I'll go through the city, just to get to the bridge. But from where I am, it takes me 5 minutes down to Major Deegan, right to the bridge. No, real city driving. So highway. But that could be messed up too. So what are you going to do? And, well, they're working on that new Tappan Zee Bridge, so I don't know if you're going to be able to, you know, see that or use that before you retire. What are you, Charlie?
Yeah, I hope not. From what I understand, the toll's going to go through the roof when they finish the bridge, I guess, to help pay for it. So I'm hoping that lasts at least another 6 years. But I have a feeling I'll be commuting over it at least a year or so. It just depends on how long they take. I have a feeling once they get the pilings in and they start with the expansions, you know, the decks and stuff, I think that part will go fast. I think what they're doing now is crucial to keeping the bridge from falling over, so they're taking their sweet time, make sure they get it done right. I can't imagine what they're doing. You know, I'm not an engineer, but it's got to be fairly interesting to see what they're doing. I know something's going on under the water. They've got to support that bridge somehow. But I haven't got a clue what they're doing. I'd love to talk to somebody that's involved with that and find out exactly what they're how they're preparing the sea bottom or the river bottom to support all that structure.
That must be interesting, really. Knock those piles down. I guess I'd ask to keep banging them down until they stop, or until they hit bedrock or something. But, some of those piles could be quite long. And I don't know how they really get them to stay. in one spot, because with all that river water rushing by, things could move. So I guess they must, pour some cement down there too, as a big footing. I don't know. Like you say, it's a lot of fun, and it's going to take a while. I'm pretty sure of that. It's not going to be done overnight. Hopefully they'll get it up and going before the old one falls down.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Especially since I take it twice a day. But I think the old one just needs a little bit of paint. But like I said, I'm not an engineer, so I guess they deemed it necessary to build a new one. I'd be curious to see how they're going to make the transition from the old one to the new one. I guess obviously the two ends are going to have to meet, where the old ones are, where the old bridge is, because I don't see any construction started to make a new entrance or an exit. So obviously somehow they're going to, meet the two together at the toll end and at the Rockland County end. That in itself should be kind of interesting too. Yeah, I've been trying to find a place to stop and take a picture. I'd like to chronicle this building of the new bridge. Take a few pictures every year. Do it until I retire, until the new bridge is up. But it'll be interesting. I've never seen a bridge being built like that. I'll have a bird's eye view of it for the next 5 or 6 years. AC2T, N1LU mobile.
1LU, AC2T. Yeah, that's a good idea. you have the know how to do it. You're going to be passing by it every day, so you could really see the construction going up once they start assembling the upper part of it. So that's going to be interesting. And you're taking pictures of it like that every day, you're going to really see the difference. And it's something to show your grandchildren when it's finished.
N1LU mobile. Yeah, I can tell them I watched that bridge being built. I watched, there's a, I don't know if you travel a lot, but on the Hutchinson River Parkway as you get toward White Plains, just before the 287 overpass, is a mobile station there that you can get to from either northbound or southbound side. I've stopped at that thing quite a lot in my 20 plus years of commuting to New Jersey. And when I first started, it wasn't there. It was an abandoned station. I believe there was an abandoned station there. It might have been just grass for all I know, but it was quite a while ago. But I watched them build that and couldn't wait for them to open it because it was a nice, convenient spot. And now, of course, it's been there a while. It's been open for quite a while now. And now they're doing two mobile stations in Connecticut. Just as you get into Connecticut, or if you're getting out of Connecticut. One's on the northbound side of the Merritt, just over the Connecticut border. The other one's on the southbound side, just over the Connecticut border into New York. So they're revamping those. That's been going on for at least a year or so. And finally, they got the pumps in. Now they're finishing up the building, and I think they're going to start stocking it. I'm hoping it'll be open in the next month or two. Because that comes in handy. If I go over the Tappan Zee, I don't like going past my exit and going to the mobile stop on the Hutch to get coffee. Then I have to turn around, head like I'm going home, and then head to the Tappan Zee. That's a little bit out of my way. Once they open up this mobile stop on the Merritt, I'll be able to stop there, get coffee, and then just continue on my route to the Tap. So I'm looking forward to it getting open.
Yeah, well, I know those stations. I've seen them. I've stopped in a few times, and I know exactly where they are. And I've been there for quite a while. Yeah, they try to revamp some of these parkways too, but I'll tell you, some of them just too curvy. Like when I go up to my friend's house, we could take the Bronx River Parkway, but I don't like that parkway. It's too narrow, too curvy, and I'm glad they don't allow buses or cars or trucks on it. Because, you know, that thing there can really be a disaster. So I usually take the Sprain up, and then from there I go up to Armagh. So that makes it a lot easier, that Sprain. But that can also be because, I'll tell you, you could be doing 55, 60 miles an hour, and they pass you like you're standing still. You think your car stopped. I mean, people drive crazy, I'll tell you. I don't understand it. They got plenty of time, but everybody is in a hurry. And instead of staying in one lane and staying at a steady speed, I mean, they're all over the road, back and forth, from one side to the other, just passing cars.
Oh, yeah, I see it happen all the time. People zooming in and out just to get in front of you, and they end up getting to the same place you're getting to, only, you know, one car length in front of you, but they expend a lot of energy to do that. I think it's slow and steady. I'm usually around 60 miles an hour all the way in. And going home, it might be a little bit faster, because there's a lot of cars on the road by then. And I've tried going 55 when gas was real high. I was trying to get the best gas mileage I could get, and they say to go 55 to do that, but going home at 55 miles an hour, are you kidding me? I get little old ladies flipping me the bird. That's like standing still 55 miles an hour on a, you know, on a major highway at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Traffic's really zooming back and forth. So 55, you better get in the ultra-slow lane, because nobody does 55. But coming in, it's a lot more pleasant ride. You know, I can take my time. I can do 55, 60 miles an hour and not bother anybody and not feel like I'm standing still because there's nobody around here to pass me.
That's what's nice when there's nobody, you know, ahead of you or behind you. And you've got the road to yourself, which is nice, I'll tell you.
Okay.
But some of these roads, they get... packed up with traffic. Well, I can understand why there's accidents with these guys are darting in and out, you know, to try and get around cars. But like you say, when you get to where you want to be, he's only a car ahead of you. So it's crazy. All right, I'll be on the standby, and maybe somebody else will pop in there. So we'll let you drive along, and we'll be standing by. We'll catch you. If we don't catch you later, do have a safe trip the rest of the way. And again, have a Merry Christmas to you and yours. And hopefully we'll talk to you before the New Year. So we'll say 73 now there, Charlie. And take care. N1LU, AC2T.
All right, very good, Paul. Thanks for joining me in the ride. Excuse me, just got into... Fort Lee. Oh, man, I got a tickle in my throat. Usually I have a cup of coffee, but I'm a little bit behind schedule today, so I didn't stop. I did want to mention, that when you mentioned Mayapak, that's where my Elmer lived. I used to go up to see him at least twice a month, sometimes more. If we were doing a project or something together, I would go up as often as I can, almost every Saturday. My wife wasn't too keen on it, but I'd get up early. I'd get to his house by 8 o'clock in the morning, because he was an early riser, maybe even 7:30. We'd work on projects. Him and I built a couple of transverters, a couple of field strength meters together. Real nice guy. He's since passed away, but I used to go to Mayapak a lot. His name was Bill, WA2WEJ. I don't know if you've ever worked him.
That don't sound so familiar, and I'd have to look back in my log and see, but other than that, no, that name don't strike me.
He was big into VHF. Only toward the end of his life did he get into HF. He was just VHF mostly. Then he ended up getting a good deal on a 756 Pro, and he was hooked. But he taught me a lot about building antennas. And he always said try to build, you know, try to get, you know, involved in homebrewing in some aspect of the hobby. I was never really good at building radios or amplifiers, anything like that, but I hope he's enjoyed building antennas, and they were fairly simple to do. Whether it's a wire antenna, I built a couple of big beams, 2-meter beams, 440 beams, 32 element, 440 beam. I still have it in the garage on square aluminum stock. That's my pride and joy, that antenna. That thing, the elements are dead on, straight in line, because it's a, you know, square boom. It's easy to mark off the holes and drill them straight. It's a little bit challenging to drill on a round boom. But I had a lot of fun. He taught me a lot about the hobby, and sure do miss him. He used to get on every morning. Always liked talking about antennas. Never liked mundane chit-chat. He always felt that was a waste of air time. But he always liked to talk about antennas and theory, and he taught me a heck of a lot about the hobby. Gave me a big interest in homebrewing whatever I could. All right, Paul, take care. Good to talk to you. I'll be at work in probably 10 minutes, I guess. AC2T and 1LU Mobile.
LU, AC2T, well, I loved building stuff too. I built three HW101s, one for myself, one for a friend, and one for a cousin over in Slovakia. So that was fun. And then I also built the HeatKit 25-inch color TV in 3 days. That was cool. And a lot of the other things that HeatKit had, so I enjoyed that, and I never had any problem, digging into a radio or fixing it or tearing it apart to see what's wrong with it. That's, to me, I learned quite a bit there. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your trip, and, maybe we'll catch you during the week again. 73 for now, Charlie, and we'll be talking to you. N1LU, AC2T.
All right, Paul, next time you're on, remind me about the HW101. I have one at home that I think, needs to be worked on, but I got it for a real good price, and I just like the looks of the radio, and so I could chew your ear off about that and ask a lot of questions, but we'll save that for the next time we talk. Take care. AC2T and 1LU Mobile.
82 BOR Mobile.
Get the rotors off. We're on. What were you doing? Taking them off or putting them on?
Trying to get them off. They were frozen on the hub, but I got them off.
Was a hammer involved?
Yeah, that and a screw. It's a Honda Accord. They happen to have threaded holes in the rotor that you can put through. And it starts pulling them off the hub, so I put some pressure on them with the screws and gave them a hit, and they came off.
And what do you have to do, cut them when you go back?
One is already done. I just got to machine the other one when I get back.
I'd like to watch that sometime. Maybe I'll plan on coming by when you're going to do a rotor job. That would be pretty interesting to watch that machine work. I've never seen one.
The whole part of a brake job is how you machine the rotors. You got to get them nice and smooth and put what they call a non-directional finish on it. Maybe when I have an old rotor around and, the one that can't be cut because it's too thin already, I'll have it set up on the machine and just give you a quick idea what it looks like when it's being done.
Yeah, that's cool. Maybe a Saturday or something when we're planning on putting up an antenna for you. When the spring thaw comes. Want to do it before the leaves come out on the trees. It's a little bit easier to figure out where you're going to hang it. Have you thought about an antenna yet?
No, not yet, Charlie. I'm not going to do nothing for the spring, so I'm not even beating my brains out about it. I got some other things I got to take care of. So, well, when it gets warm out, I tell you, this weekend it's going to be like spring.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Although, with all this snow around, the ground's going to be all soggy and muddy, and it's going to be a mess. Snow melting, cars will be filthy. But it'll be nice to have the warmer weather. I hope the plants don't get confused.
KD2BOR. You know, I didn't mention this to you yesterday. I'm going across Ridge Road here on my little ride. I passed a gas station yesterday. I'm passing one now. The price on there is $3.19 for regular cash. Then yesterday I passed one. It was $3.03. I can't figure out how they're doing their pricing.
Yeah, $3.19 is what I've been paying. $3.03, man, I'd kill for that.
I'm going to be going by it in a little while. I think it's what they call Luke Oil. I'm pretty sure I saw $3.039 yesterday.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap. I wonder if they want you to pay in gold bullion.
I can't stand looking at this dashboard on my truck right now. It's saying low tire. That's because I only got the spare on there, and it doesn't have a monitor in it.
When are you going to do that job?
When I get back to the shop, it's going up on the other lift.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice being a ham and having your own lifts. You can, especially if you want to put an HF antenna, you could really do some really, really super good grounding being able to get it underneath the car like that. Somebody's pussycat's not coming home. Well, what a shame.
KD2BOR, I was like you, Charlie. When I was growing up, I liked cats myself, too. There it is. I'm passing the Luke Oil on Ridge Road, 3039.
Of course, it's not open right now, right?
No.
I tell you, it's almost worth going out of my way to get gas up there. Although, when you think about it, if you get 10 gallons from the $3.19, you're only saving like $1.60. Maybe it's not worth it.
I was just going to say that. Charlie, you'll be using the $1.50 just going from your job over here.
It is amazing how much different price can be, you know, from one station to another. In Connecticut, it looks like it's going up. But over here, I thought it looked like it might have been coming down, although it does seem a bit stable now. I'm going to drive past the quick check this morning just to see if it's budged.
Yeah, here's another Delta station on Ridge Road, 3039.
Well, maybe they know something we don't know.
Frank, I'm going down the past couple days, 2PKW.
I heard somebody in there. I think she said something about it's been going down. Yeah, you were just a little noisy. The Exxon station that you turn at, or around there, 3319.
Hey, you and I keep doubling. The DPW, try it again. Sounded like KC2DPW. I think we've worked them before. Maybe it's just out of range. Yeah, that's ridiculous. 330-something in New Jersey?
3319 at the Exxon for regular. Medium grade was 349.9.
Went down 2 cents over here. 317 is a quick check. Now I'm going to go, and that's open now. Now I'm passing, I'm going to go past the Global over here that's closed. This guy's usually real cheap. See what he is. I'm coming up to it now. It's hard to see in the dark. 315. So he's even 2 cents cheaper than the other guy. So it is going down because it was 319 earlier in the week. Went down 2 cents.
KD2BOR. I'm coming up to another guy that's usually pretty cheap. I want to see what he's at. He's nothing. He's 315. He's usually cheap.
I'll tell you, if you open the station in Connecticut and charge 315, you'd be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You'd have everybody in Connecticut wanting gas.